This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thank you, Sabrina, for the news. My name is Rich Bradbury. I'm in the studio with
Majida Hashim
and Christine Wong.
It is, of course, Friday, the 22nd of December. It is Christmas weekend. We're all happy. It's Friday.
Yay!
Everything is coming together all at once. Sabrina is jumping around in the news booth over there. Anyway, we've got some stories lined up for you today and, of course, some podcasts that we recommend that you should listen to over this festive weekend. We're going to be starting off, though, with a bit of a story about a gaming disorder, or the gaming disorder, I should say. Moving on to something called Podia. It helps content creators build their online businesses. Everybody who's listening and got their own little online business, this could be useful. Christine will then be talking to us about the 14 most important interfaces of 2017. Have you got a hot pick?
I've got a couple that I really want to highlight later on, but we'll speak about that.
Okay, okay. And then a little bit about trucks.
Yep.
We've gone from AI and we've gone from drones and now we're on
brain electrodes.
And we're on a truck thing currently. Right. And if you want to get in touch with the show, as per usual, get us on Twitter. We're at BFM Radio or on WhatsApp 018-789-8899. Right. Gaming disorder is soon to be classified as a mental health condition for the very first time.
Finally.
The International Classification of Diseases is a diagnostic manual that's been published by the World Health Organization, last updated 27 years ago in 1990. It will be the 11th edition of the manual, due to be published next year, and will include gaming disorder as a serious health condition to be monitored. Here's the interesting thing. Mm. The wording of the gaming disorder hasn't been revealed yet. However, on New Scientist reports, the draft outlines the criteria needed to determine whether somebody can be classed as having a gaming disorder. Vladimir Pozniak, who's a member of the WHO's Department of Mental Health and Substance Abuse, spoke about the importance of recognizing gaming disorder as an important health issue. Here's a quote. Health professionals need to recognize that gaming disorder may have serious health consequences. Most people who play video games don't have a disorder, just like most people who drink alcohol don't have a disorder either. However, in certain circumstances, overuse can lead to adverse effects. A little bit vague there.
Mm.
Last year, researchers from the University of Oxford's Internet Institute undertook a study to investigate the percentage of gamers who are addicted to video games. This study was published in the American Journal of Psychiatry and found that only 2-3% of the 19,000 men and women surveyed from the UK, US, Canada, and Germany admitted that they experienced 5 or more of the symptoms that the American Psychiatric Association checklist of health symptoms. No, I don't have those 5 symptoms with me right now. Right. So here's another quote from Dr. They always have these really strange Polish names, you know. Dr. Andrew Perzbiliski, lead author of the University of Oxford study, discussed their findings, and he says, to our knowledge, these are the first findings from a large-scale project to produce robust evidence on the potential new problem of internet gaming disorder. I remember speaking about this years ago, maybe 2007 or 2008, when it first came up in South Korea, where there were a lot of people who were like not leaving the internet rooms, and they were having their meals there, and they were sleeping there, and all kinds of stuff.
Yeah.
And that's when people started saying, you know, there may be something attached to this. I think China at that point were even looking at these, I want to use the word concentration camp, but that's not what it was. These camps where people who had some kind of gaming addiction were sent to.
To detox from technology.
Yeah,
so like gaming rehab.
Yeah, gaming rehab. Yeah. And but they were very, very severe. And it was really seriously frowned upon because they were quite harsh with their methods. But the idea of being addicted to games, Majida, I know you're not much of a gamer, and Christine, I know you were a bit of a gamer.
I'm kind of like a semi-gamer in the sense that, like, I've dipped my toes. why is dipped such a hard word to say? I've dipped my toes into the pool of a few games, but I've never really encountered a thing where I had an addiction necessarily or anything like that. The closest are things which required you to like log in every day.
Right.
To play them every day.
Right.
So like Animal Crossing, for example, if you don't play every day, your flowers die and
then
your villagers leave.
Oh, no.
So that's the kind of thing where I think there are some games that do kind of promote, you know, and especially with massive multiplayer online role-playing games, those where you can interact with people and then suddenly it becomes like a whole universe that you can escape
into. World of Warcraft
into.
Kind of thing.
Yeah, like Stargate and things like that. That's, I think, where a lot of these addictions might come from. I think that's kind of one of the species? No, genre. Genre of game.
It's a Friday.
You're on a roll today. Yeah. What's going on?
I don't even know. I'm in a Christmas mood. All of my words are coming out, and it's a gift to all of you. But I think those are the kinds of games that would probably spark that kind of addiction the most, because you end up, you know, essentially escaping to this entire fantasy universe where you can interact with all these people and be a different person. And I kind of understand how that could come about. But the same could be said for any kind of thing digitally anyway nowadays, you know, like our smartphones, you know, social media, checking your Facebook constantly, Twitter, whatever. So I think this is something that is kind of a bit of a, well, duh kind of thing
right.
for me at this
point. I think you're right. I think the classification should be shifted to digital content or something along those lines. I mean, thinking about it, Majita, you do play Clash of Clans quite regularly, right?
For the last 5 years.
For the last five years.
Yeah. So, and my clan, I have a clan in Clash of Clans that wars regularly. So every 24 hours we're at war and the whole team has to go on. So
you are.
I do that, but then...
It's supposed to be the weekend of peace for all nations, you know?
And I'm wondering why right now they're being classified as a mental disorder, because
it's the first time the manual has been updated in 27 years.
We've had years of people dying at consoles. Yes. And you actually don't have to go very far. You can go over to SS15 at Subang, where all the cyber cafes are.
There's a cyber cafe literally next door.
Yeah. Right, and they are there all night long. Everybody's in this headset and these colourful things. It's there all night long. We do have a regulation here in Malaysia where a cyber cafe has to close at a certain point. And I know that people are at home continuing playing these games. Mm. And like you said, Richard, there are people who are eating there and they live their whole life there.
And the food's not good.
The food is junk. It's mostly soda and all these salty snacks. But we've had these cases of people playing there for 5 straight days and places in Taipei, in Japan, in Korea, in China. And people keep dying. People are bringing out, they go in, they play the game, and they never come out.
Yeah. There's that story about that woman in China who went missing for 5 years. And they ended up finding her in an internet cafe.
Oh, my goodness.
You know, her family were going crazy, and she literally made it her home. Mm. You know,
I wonder how people can afford this, because they're paying either playing by an hour or there's a membership, but they have left this world, and they're playing in that world, and How kind of living do they make?
I mean, I think this is the thing with any other kind of addiction as well. You know, you think about any kind of addiction like gambling or alcoholism or anything like that. And that also, it's like, well, where are they getting the money to finance this addiction?
Mm. Right.
It's the same kind of concept, I think. Too much of any good thing is a bad thing.
I mean, I often feel the compulsion to play a game, you know, but I would never say I am addicted to it and I have to play it, otherwise I don't feel like a full person. You know, there are times when I think, I could just go online and like you, Majita, shoot a few people and feel good about it when I log out.
But do you play one of those single player games, or do you play those that network
all
you
kinds,
with all kinds,
all kinds,
right?
Yeah. So, I mean, I get it. I mean, there's that sense of community as well. I think that's part of it too.
I don't know.
Right, let's move on. Podia helps content creators build their online businesses. This is something that's been around for a while, right?
Yeah. Okay. So what this is that actually what happened was Podia started off as this company called Coach, which was a startup that offers tools for tutors and other freelancers to make money and operate their business online. But since then, the company has shifted focus in a pretty big way, and it's recently announced that it's raised $3 million in seed funding. What is interesting about this that I kind of like is that basically, after launching, Coach found that many of its users weren't actually tutors. Instead, there were a lot of other types of content creators joining the platform. So they decided to essentially go, hey, you know, people that we didn't expect to be in our demographic are suddenly now in our demographic. Let's see what we can do.
Right.
Let's see how we can shift our features. And so what Coach or Podia is now is essentially a tool that creates digital storefronts for content creators. So it's kind of similar to things like Patreon or Gumroad and things like that.
Fiverr, perhaps?
Yeah, something like that. But instead of kind of focusing on like a single niche or a business model, Podia allows creators to charge for online courses, sell digital downloads, and in the most recent editions, some memberships. It's very kind of, you know, you can kind of tailor it to what you need from this tool. And also, another interesting thing is that it kind of allows you to own everything as well. So you can actually use your own domain name and things like that still. It's not like, let's say, blank.blogspot.com or something like that. It is your own content, but it allows you to kind of create all your stuff in one kind of one-stop shop, essentially, right? And what I really find fascinating is that it's already working with more than 7,500 creators, with a handful of them bringing in more than $100,000 over the past year. So this is not and something small anymore. Yeah, it's something that's really grown and developed.
I mean, I'm just reading the last piece about why they changed the name as well.
Yeah.
Apparently, the guy hated calling the company Coach because it made it so hard to find them on Google.
Yeah.
They find handbags instead.
I would imagine so. Yeah.
So, but I mean, this is something that I think will be very useful for some of the people listening who may be, maybe struggling to get the kind of, content up on the digital platform. And the thing is, it's not even that expensive. There are two subscription tiers. One is for first-time content sellers and costs $39 a month, but the other one only costs $79 a month. So if you're bringing in like $100,000 in a year,
and you're still only paying $79.
Exactly, a month.
Which is a month, yeah.
Insane.
Yeah.
So, it's something that I think is worth checking out and having a look at.
Definitely. So that is Podia.com, folks. Head over to that and check it out for a little bit later on. When we come back then, we've got some more stories. The first one, when we come back, the 14 most important interfaces of 2017. We're going to have a look at some of those. Let's have some Christmas music, shall we? A little bit of Coldplay, Christmas Lights here on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Bloggers for Malaysia. BFM 89.9.
Welcome back to Enterprise Biz Bytes. My name is Rich Bradbury with
Christine Wong
and Majida Hashim.
Oh my word, I just sneezed and nobody heard it. I managed to push the button just in time. Right, so next story. The 14 most important interfaces of 2017. This is from Fast Code Design, I believe. Yeah. We're not going to get the time to go through all 14 of them, but I know, Christine, you've cherry-picked a few that we think are important. Right?
Yeah, so I think a big thing in 2017 is that there's been a lot of revolutionary software that's come out, and it's there's a lot of leaps forward in technology that I think are really interesting. First of all, just on a kind of lighter note, Google has created a panic mode, which basically is when you are looking at something on your phone in a web browser, but then all the pop-ups come up and you can't go back and you panic and you're just like, how do I get out of this feedback loop of ads and pop-ups? And now Google has a panic mode that basically, what I love about the description of this is that it says, it's code within Android that spots when you start tapping the screen like a panicked woodpecker. And when you do, the OS automatically takes you back to the home screen. Unfortunately, it's only available on Android. So iPhone, get on it, please, Apple. Let's just do that. The second thing I want to highlight is this thing called Oculus Dash, which is basically, we all have had that dream of having a holographic interface that you can mess around with and stuff. Well, that's what Oculus Dash basically is. It's a VR operating system that sits on top of Windows, and it puts a long bar at your waist where it floats almost like a banister. You can swipe it to swap apps, and you can do all this stuff. I will just mention that it technically isn't out until next year. So I don't really
know.
But we
saw what it looked like.
But we saw what it looked like, and it's coming, and we're excited about it, and it would be cool just to mess around and feel like you're on Star Trek. Another thing that is interesting is the Samsung Dex, which is a $150 dock for Galaxy smartphones that turns the Android phone into a desktop computer. Now, this in and of itself is not exactly revolutionary, but the fact of the matter is what I like about this is that Samsung is making a big effort to try and do something new. And what the copy of the article says as well is that, like, let's be real, if Apple did the same thing with an iPhone, we would all be reading this article on an iDex right now.
Right.
So I find that interesting that, there are so many companies trying very hard to actually revolutionize what they're doing with their existing gadgets and not just slowing things down on purpose.
Hint, hint. They're being sued now, There's a class action lawsuit being filed against Apple currently.
Well, good.
It's about time. It's about time.
Yeah. Okay. So then the last two things I want to cover both have to do with algorithms. Themis is a freely available bit of code that can mimic the process of entering thousands of data points, so like loan applications or criminal records, into a given website or app. And by changing specific variables methodically, it can spot patterns of prejudice in any web form. And what I really like about this is that, the idea of AIs and algorithms, it's kind of scary because sometimes you don't know how they think, kind of. And this is an interesting way of seeing, not only how the algorithm works, but also how, to take into account human bias as well when it comes to entering the data points into things. And then on another note is... So the UK studio IF has also developed a concept for how we could look inside algorithms to understand what we're seeing and why. So with the first one, with the Themis, it's kind of like, okay, what is kind of wrong and how can we fix it and how can we make our data less biased? And with the IF, this is more of a concept of, okay, how do they work? What are these algorithms looking at? Why are they looking at this? And it's kind of, the interface itself is not exactly radical, but the intent of it is. And I appreciate the thought of making these process is clearer for people who may want to understand how exactly they work.
Right. I think that if we were to look at some of the already established pieces of software, let's take like Instagram and Snapchat, for example. Some of the stuff that they've done this year has been quite interesting as well. The dancing banana thingy or whatever it was kind of fun, you know. And then some of the stuff like the Zoom that they had on
Super Zoom,
the kind of little bits of fun that, you know, weren't groundbreaking, but I think they add a little bit of value to how people were sharing stuff on Instagram. And it made me laugh a little bit more this year.
I mean, Instagram's also done a polling sticker slap a thing that says, hey, do you like this thing, yes or no? Or like, which one do you like better?
Right.
And that in and of itself, it's not exactly like, wow, this is going to change the universe, but it allows content like that to be a little bit more interactive.
Exactly.
So
yeah, and people always like it when you get a thumbs up or a little heart. And of course, when you're interacting and you're voting on it as well, you're like, people actually read and they watch my feed.
Yeah,
it's nice,
you
right?
A better incentive to look at Instagram stories suddenly.
Right.
You know?
Some of the stuff, Magina, anything that, you know, that you've been looking at this year in terms of software updates and interfaces that have kind of caught your eye this year?
One of the things I like is there is a lot of videos, I think, that have gone on all social medias this year. It's gone on Facebook, which is not as successful as it was in Instagram, but now everyone can be a journalist or everyone can be a videographer right now.
Citizen journalist, as it were.
Everyone's on it. And what's interesting is that there is now the option of it being on stories, so it disappears in 24 hours, or it can be permanently in your thing and your feed. And the idea of things being temporary, I think, is very interesting. That has happened a lot this year. One with stories that disappear after 24 hours. To me, what's interesting is WhatsApp's button that allows you to take back what you have said.
Right.
To me, I think that was one of the things this year that will change how we treat data, because what is out there that is taken back. And all of this thing, making data temporary and being able to take back, was the big piece of contention last time. It made people think, should I put this on the internet? Should I put this on social media and think? But now you can take it back or it disappears after 24
right.
hours.
I mean, I remember a period when you really did think like that before you posted anything on the internet, whether it be, even if it's just Facebook or Twitter, you would sit there and you would think it through before. Nowadays, people just, you know, they're tweeting their shopping lists.
Yeah, I mean, that in and of itself comes with its own set of problems, because then it feels like there are no consequences to putting anything on the internet anymore after a point. But it is an interesting step forward, and I think it reflects a lot of what people want from their technology now. They want to not have to think about it so much, and they want to post whatever they want whenever they want.
I agree.
So the temporary nature, I think, is really interesting. It used to be a curation of what you are. This is who I am on Facebook, this is who I am on Instagram. Now it's like, this is who I am for now, but not really all the time.
Right. Yeah, you make sense. Music. Shall we have some music?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. How about some Grand Funk Railroad?
Oh, right.
With a little bit of a festive. Rock and roll soul. Absolutely festive. Perfect for what we're doing right here on Enterprise Biz Bytes. You are listening, of course, to Enterprise Biz Bytes. We're going to be here all the way through until 1 o'clock. Don't go anywhere when we come back. A startup that aims to beat Tesla, the semi-trucks, to the market. I'm not so sure about that. Majida, you have to convince me a little bit later on.
It's a really cool truck.
All right. It is a
cool truck. It is a badass truck.
All right. We'll be right back on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Bodacious, fabulous minds. BFM 89.9. The business station.
Welcome back to Enterprise Biz Bytes. Our final story of the day before we move on to some podcast recommendations a little bit later on. It was only yesterday we were talking about UPS and how they've signed up for one of 200. How many trucks have they signed up for?
125.
125, yes. Followed closely by Pepsi, have signed up for 100.
100 trucks.
So they're spending an awful lot of money on these trucks. Now, this fella has a bit of a different idea, right?
Almost the same, but a little bit of a different approach.
Right.
So the ones that UPS and Pepsi have signed up for is the Tesla semi-trucks.
Correct.
For you know, heavy vehicles.
Which look gorgeous, by the way.
They are gorgeous.
Yeah.
So Thor Motors, I mean, it's named after, you know, Avengers.
Yeah.
They purposely chose that name to signify power and all of it. And if you look at their logo, they do look like a transformer.
It does.
And if you look at the truck prototype itself, it's gorgeous.
Yeah.
It is shaped like a...
There's not very often I would say it's a sexy looking truck.
It is.
You know, but it's sexy truck.
I'm concerned by all of the like attractive
have you seen
trucks
it
that are coming. I've seen the Tesla one, but I haven't seen this one.
This one is so nice.
It is. And it's called the ET1. And it will be available as soon as 2019. So it's going to collide exactly with when Tesla comes out with theirs. Tesla wants to come out at the end of 2019. So this one wants to say that it's coming out at the same time. So options for people who are buying trucks. So the Class 8 ET1 is claimed to have a hauling power of 80,000 pounds at a range of 300 miles per charge and a 90-minute charge time. It intends to deliver 70% savings in fuel cost per mile, as well as 60% lower maintenance cost. It's meant for short haul and regional fleets. The price is interesting because it's expected to be about $150,000, which is significantly cheaper than
$50,000 cheaper.
Yeah, than the Tesla Semi, which is about $180,000 or more. And that's just presumed. Whereas the Tesla is a vehicle that has a production facility, and they are taking orders for mass production of this trucks, along with its own battery production pipeline in place. Thor Trucks operates out of an LA area warehouse. It's literally a warehouse that fixes trucks. And to me, that's what makes it interesting, because the founder of Thor Trucks, Dakota Semler, he manages a fleet of trucks as a part of his family business. So the family takes trucks, and this includes garbage trucks, RVs, other delivery vehicles, and for a long time, they repair vehicles. So what he's done is that he's recruited 18 engineers who are really good at electric vehicles, and he's, instead of fixing them, he's starting to put electric engines into existing trucks. So the big difference between Elon Musk and this guy is that Elon Musk goes, let's create an electric truck. And this guy goes, here are some trucks, let's electrify them.
Right.
And it's interesting because it takes what is already on the road and what that's how he prototypes it. So you can actually go on this website right now and ask for a demo, and you can take your truck and start retrofitting it already and have them test it on you. It's through all this experiment with trucks that are already on the road, that's already rolling, and he's already driving it around LA, that he creates this ultimate Thor truck.
I'm not gonna lie, out of all of the debates that we could have had at the end of 2017, I did not think that there would be like truck underdogs that we could support against like the evil Tesla truck.
Right.
I think it's really cool, and I think that it's interesting that, you know, instead of creating from scratch, like, you know, they're taking, it's actually recycling.
That's what I said to Majid, right? They're upcycling stuff.
Yeah, they're upcycling these trucks, which I think I appreciate, because I think it might also be a better incentive for people who have these trucks and will use them to deliver things and stuff.
Exactly, because they've already spent the money on the damn truck.
Yeah.
You know, they don't want to have to buy a brand new one.
Yeah.
So the interesting thing is that Bloomberg reporters went over to see Thor trucks, and one of the things that they found in this place, because they have been fixing trucks for a very long time, they found an 1819 Walker electric van panel, and it is a electric vehicle from 1918.
Wow.
It had a range of 12 to 15 miles, but they have been electrifying vehicles back then. So they are not new to putting electric battery packs into trucks. And the other second thing that I found was also interesting is that if you go on this E1 Thor Trucks website, they are looking for a bunch of interns. And you can have an internship in building this Thor truck and discovering...
Would be an electrifying experience, right?
Hey! Fantastic.
I mean, I remember electric vehicles when I was a kid. I think I've told you this before. When the milk would be delivered in the morning, it would be driven on an electric milk float. So it would be a small truck. And the only thing that you would hear in the morning was the whine of the electric motor and the rattle of the bottles. You know, it's just so it wouldn't wake people up in the morning.
Yeah. That's nice.
That's the big advantage of electric vehicles. They are not only... better for the environment because they don't burn fuel, they are also quieter.
Yeah. And they're also dangerous though because of that. Seriously, there were so many accidents in Beijing for people being knocked over by electric bicycles because you couldn't hear them coming.
But this is the thing, every time a story comes up where, you know, people, like ordinary people, are basically trying to like improve the environment and trying to help and using a source of clean energy by themselves, and it's not like a big corporation, every single time I hear a story about this, I think of that one Onion headline that's like, scientists politely remind world that clean energy is ready to go whenever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's ready. We can use it now.
Yeah. It's about time, right?
It's about time.
I like this story because it is someone who is not recreating the truck. It's actually taking trucks and experimenting with trucks that are already in existence. And that's how he derives the perfect truck.
Right. All right, Musk. Get on it.
Get on it, yeah. Right, we have to take a short break. We've got some music coming up in a second from the Get Up Kids. When we come back, we'll be giving you some podcast suggestions to listen to over this festive weekend. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to Biz Bytes here on BFM 89.9.
Business, finance, and more. BFM 89.9.
It's almost time for us to wrap up here on Enterprise Biz Bytes. We're going to be with you for at least another 5 minutes, possibly, before we let you go away onto your festive weekend and do your celebrations or whatever you're doing. So because of that, we're going to offer you some podcasts that we think you should probably listen to over the weekend. So we've got three suggestions, starting off with Christine.
Right. So I had the absolute privilege and honor of interviewing Gurmit Singh, which blows my mind, honestly, because I grew up watching him on TV. But I what I did was I talked to him on the 18th of December on Monday at 1:30 p.m. About his book, his autobiography called What Was I Thinking? And it's a really interesting way of, you know, you're talking to someone that everyone assumes that they know because he's an entertainer and he's well known. But it turns out that there's a lot more heart than you would think. So it's a really nice kind of sentimental interview to listen to over the holiday period.
All right.
Then. On Tuesday, I did a show on Resource Center, which is a 2017 look back. So, and it's really interesting because Resource Center deals a lot with management tools and and things for entrepreneurs and managers to use as part of what the work that they do. And 2017 has had a lot of very interesting tools, but not just that. We also had people from Endeavor and they're really interesting founders, and they will share things like what they go through when they were building their company to what they are now. Mm. And we also had not just tools. We also had advice for the wellness of the entrepreneur themselves. So if you want a flavor of Resource Center, you can listen to this look back episode, and then later on you can listen to the rest of Resource Center once you know what you're looking for.
Lovely stuff. Final suggestion, Five for Fortune, Arvin, of course. He did the five best ideas of 2017. He looked at some of the best ideas, innovations, and inventions that have happened over the last 12 months and how they might go on to change the world moving forward. Are we all going to have a happy 2018 then?
Of course.
Of course, yeah.
Let's hope.
Have we all been good enough for Santa to come?
No.
No?
Me neither. I am getting coal in my stocking this year.
Right. Anyway, ladies and gentlemen, that's pretty much all the time that we have for today. I will quickly run through the stories that you may have missed. If you did miss any part of the show, remember, you can listen to the podcast a little bit later on the BFM app. It is available in the Apple App Store or on Google Play. We started off how gaming disorder is to be named a mental health condition for the first time because the World Health Organization have updated the International Classification of Diseases, their manual, for the first time in 27 years.
And then we talked about Podia, which is a tool that helps content creators build their online business. And then I also spoke about five of the 14 most important interfaces of 2017 as well.
And then we spoke about Thor trucks, which is a homegrown kind of electric truck, which is set to beat Tesla Semi to the market with it by 2019.
We will see about that then. Right, don't go anywhere though, because as usual, coming up after the 1 o'clock news, is the Breakfast Grill replay with the former Sabah Chief Minister Tan Sri Bernard Dombok, who was appointed as Malaysia's first resident envoy to the Holy See in 2016. The Breakfast Grill spoke to the ambassador on diplomatic relations between Malaysia and the Vatican, as well as promoting moderation on the international stage. Definitely one you should listen to. Time for some music. We have The Kinks with Father Christmas. Don't go anywhere. It is BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.